Hello and welcome to the first podcast for the SCLC District Church Planting Podcast Series. This is a series of podcasts to describe the goals and directions of our district in regards to church planting. Hi, I'm the Reverend Dr. Mark Larson, and hosting with me is Reverend Jacob Hoyer. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great today. And today our topic is to review the recent history of church planting in our district and what insight that provides for the future. So today our special guest is a man that needs little introduction in the SCLC district, especially to Jacob, and that would be the Reverend Paul Hoyer. And he has served as the mission executive of the SCLC district since around the year 2000. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Oh, our pleasure. Well, Paul, first I want to thank you for your ministry as a district leader over these last 20 years or so. And there was a study by the National LCMS Church Office that noted that the SCLC district has fared as one of the best in terms of retaining members since the year 2000. Now, we unfortunately still lost members, but we maintained better than almost any other district. And so apart from God's mercy, I really believe that this is due in a large part to your ministry directing church planting in our district. So my thanks and gratitude to you, and we're glad that we can have you here today to sort of pick your brain in terms of church planting. So my first question is, how did it all start?
That's probably a good question. And I've recently retired, and so I spend quite a bit of time looking back and thinking about how did this all get to where it is today. And for the SCLC district, I vicared for Dr. Al Marsis, who was the president of the district, and that vicarage was in 1978-79. And while I was a vicar there, the district had its first church plant as a district of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They had started some churches when they were a different denomination, but as the LCMS, their first church plant was in 78-79. Now, I say church plant, except that at that time, the mission board, they would get the demographics of an area where they thought they might like to start a church, and they would look for one of the areas that's growing fastest with people coming in to that area, which meant that usually they were looking at the suburbs of the larger cities to make that start. And the first thing they would do is, once they had identified an area, they would engage a realtor and they would look at buying property so that they would have property where all the people are building their houses. And they would get all that property in order and they would have the space. And then they would set about trying to call a pastor who would be the beginning of that church. The one in Ohio that the property was identified late 70s, and they began, I think, around 79 or 78, maybe even 1980, with the first pastor in that church in outside of Cleveland in one of their growing areas. And then in 1983, they called me to go to Florida to start one. And I was starting in an area where it was growing, a suburb that was really growing. The district had already bought the land. They already had plans of how it should go. And when they called me and started me, they said, you'll have 10 years of support. Okay. And what they meant when they said that was they would give us money for 10 years. Okay. Right. Other than that, there was no support. In the whole of the church body, there was not any training in church planting or anything like that. So, first day that after my installation, I got my tie on, I dressed, and my wife said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Out there." And she said, "What's that?" I said, "That's my office." And I started walking the streets and talking to people. And that's how we started our first church. And into the 80s for the SCLC district, that was pretty much the model. We would try to identify a fast-growing area demographically, and then we would try to identify an attractive piece of property that would be right in front of everybody. So like our property is just off of the main drag, Lake Mary Boulevard, and we would also look at, you know, major interstates as they go out and things like that, where the building would be within sight of the people. And so we looked at that into the 80s, well into the 80s, as our way to start. And as a matter of fact, with my first church building, well, actually, it was the second one, I think, where the second time we built at Holy Cross in Lake Mary, the theme for our capital campaign was, if you build it, they will come. Straight out of the 80s. And it kind of typified how we thought church planting worked. You get a building, you put it up, and you invite people there. And so you got a lot of people that were already Christian that were looking for a better place to worship. You know, that's what you ended up with. And that was the start in our country of the large mega churches who were doing basically the same thing. In the SELC district, coming into the 90s, we started to realize that model was not sustainable. We couldn't afford, it was taking over $500,000 just to get one church started. And we just were not able to do that. But we still had this idea that the church building and the property was a very important part of what we should be looking for. But we realized that what we should be funding is the pastor to do that. So we started in the 90s, working with pastors that were going through, have been vetted to see whether they had the gifts and the talents to be a church planter. And that was before there was too much actually where you could get that, you know, online or any way like that to see whether you had the gifts to be a church planter. Realizing that being a church planter is different than being a pastor. You have to have a certain other gifts, entrepreneurial talents and things of that sort that make it different and that make it easier for the church to get started. So we started in that time saying we would give 3 years of support for the pastor and we would allow for a loan for the property and the building, but it would have to come from the church itself. They would have to take out the loan, the new congregation. And that was how we started churches in the 90s. And then as we came to the end of the 2000s, we realized that, as I think both of you know, the emphasis on the buildings is not so important. And so as we began to start churches, we didn't encourage congregations to actually get land and build right away. We encouraged them to build up a group of people, a group that would come together and be the community of God in that place and let that grow into whatever kind of church building they were going to have. At that time is when churches around the country started to look at existing buildings. And so they were building churches in warehouses. They were building churches in car lots that had been new car lots, things of that sort. I saw one that was built in an old Target. And so people began to look as church congregations, they looked for what was more affordable in their area and then they would make that into a church. And so throughout that course of that and the things that went, we've been able to do that. Also in the 2000s, we realized that we had a specific niche in looking at immigrants. The SELC is an immigrant church. Luther Church Missouri Synod is really an immigrant church. And so we looked at the urban areas where a lot of the SELC churches were, and we saw that they were being surrounded by immigrants of different ethnic backgrounds. And so we began in the 2000s to try and start some ethnic ministry. How could we start some ethnic churches, either as a portion of the Anglo churches that are there or as ethnic churches on their own. And that's taken us, you know, up to where we are. And as everybody knows, just as a footnote, the pandemic has changed everything. And so everybody is asking the question, what is church planting going to look like after 2020?
Yeah, I like that. I like that full history. And I like you talked about all the different ways that people have planted churches into different buildings. My wife laughs at me because when we're driving around, anytime I see an empty building, I say, well, somebody should put a church in there, you know, because because growing up in your house, Dad, you know, like that was kind of the thinking was always like, how can we plant new churches? And so when I'm driving around, I see an empty building, I'm like, that'd be a good place for a church, you know? So, so as we were getting ready, to shape this new vision for church planting for the district, we did a little research and noticed that 31% of our congregations have been planted since 1980. So that's 18 out of 58 congregations by a certain enumeration. A couple of our congregations are multi-site, and so I think we have 55 of record, but we counted 58. And so 18 of our 58, that's 31%, have been planted since 1980. And as you mentioned, Dad, that's about the time, just a couple of years after the SCLC joined Synod. So what do you think has been – oh, and Mark even mentioned – that church planting effort could really be a part of the reason that the SCLC has been able to retain a higher percentage of our people than some other districts. So, like, what are some of the factors you think have led to that success? You know, this quantity of church planting and its ability to kind of help us hold on to people. What are some of the factors that have allowed for that, you think?
Well, I think one of the factors is that we were one of the first districts in the Missouri Synod to offer more help for the church planter than simply giving them cash. Jared Kovac, who was the executive director before me, started the practice of regularly meeting with all the church planters that he had, talking to them about what was going on, trying to help and guide them. And the district president we had at that time, Al Marsis, he would make it a point to regularly call and talk to you as a church planter to see how it was going and see if he could give direction and help and answer questions that you might have. So I think part of the reason that we were successful in growing some of these churches was because of that. The other reason was, and you guys both have heard me say this, but the most important thing in planting a church is the man. You got to get the right guy in the right place in order for a church to really grow. And the right guy can make a church grow maybe even in the wrong place if you locate him there. Because the Lord blesses you. And as the Lord blesses people and gives them gifts and talents in a particular area, and they learn how to use them for the growth of the church, God blesses that. And it has caused us to have some very good growing churches in the SCLC. And as both of you pointed out, the increases that we've had from nothing in the last 40 years as new churches makes up for what we've lost in members in the churches that have some age to them in the SCLC.
Yeah, very good. And that's really exciting to see. And it's been known for a long time that church planting is really essential for the health of a denomination or a health of a district. So Paul, I was wondering, you mentioned a number of ways in which the district has been committed to church planting. What were maybe some areas where you think the district could have done better in terms of planting, in supporting church planters?
Well, early on, I think while the district president and the director of missions both were taking time with church planters and being a part of them, for the first 20 years of my time in the SCLC district, I was one of several church planters, and we would go to conventions or pastors' conferences, and we were really looked at as not really being pastors. And we really didn't get the support from the rest of the clergy in the district. Now the congregations of the district could get excited about a new mission and their LWMLs would send money and do that kind of thing. But all of the pastors kind of looked at us, you know, with slant eyes, looking over the side saying, I don't know if what you're doing is quite right. You know, we were having churches, you know, that were meeting without a without a building and that kind of thing. And they didn't always know that that was, they didn't always know how to be supportive of that. However, in the last 10, 15 years, that's changed. The pastors that we have in the district are pretty committed to growing the church through church planting. And from a lot of the churches that are in the district, I've had questions from the pastor of how could I begin a church or how could I be a church planter and things of that sort. So I think the idea that church planting is here to stay in the SALC is for sure. And the support of the fellow pastors is just crucial. It makes you feel like you're not out there all alone.
Yeah, excellent, excellent.
Yeah, we've heard now, like, you kind of gave us a good survey of the history of church planting in the district, and we were talking even before we started recording. You've been mission exec since around the year 2000, but we're on the mission committee even longer than that, and so you've seen a lot, and mentioned kind of some highs and lows. What are some conclusions that you're drawing at this point about church planting in the district? And I think another way to say that might be, like, if you had to make a declarative statement about what you've seen in church planting over the last decades, what's something that you're willing to kind of plant a flag in the ground on as far as some things you've learned around church planting?
Well, I think one of the things that I've learned about church planting is one of the things that a lot of people have a hard time accepting, and that is that the church is always going to be somewhat like the society and the community that it's in. If you look at the New Testament churches, they were formed around the communities where they were. They were formed with the kind of people that were there in the community, whether they be rich or poor. And they were accessible for the general people. And in the times when churches have grown and church planting has worked is when the church itself, the new community, is actually relevant to the people who live in the community. If you don't see yourself as part of the community, if you don't see yourself as a church planter, as, you know, reaching out to the community, then you're never going to be able to start a church. So I think that's a crucial fact, is to be, as we look at how we've started churches in the past, how we're going to be starting them in the future, things are going to be different. The main thing is going to be the love and the opportunity to serve the community that we live in. If we want to separate ourselves from that community, and if we see the church as a place to get out of the community and into something else, maybe people who look like us and believe like us and things of that sort, then the church is never going to grow. That church is going to stay the same or shrink. But the churches that are going to be growing are the ones that are relevant to people who aren't in the church yet. And so the things we choose to do need to be chosen as things that will interest the people who aren't even there yet, not things that will interest the people who already go to this church, who already belong to this church. But we need to be looking at the community and say, what does it need outside of this? And I think, Jake, as I look beyond today and into the future for the SALC, we have to be looking at a whole different idea of what church is. You know, I said in the history, they started thinking that the main thing was to have a piece of property and a building. In the Florida-Georgia district, when I came here in 1983, they were just finishing. They had bought a piece of property and built an entire building, then got the pastor and started the congregation.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that was, you know, the church was, the building was primary. And then, as I said, we got to the point where the pastor was primary, and it was all about having the right guy. And what we found with that was that yeah, that worked. He managed to grow a group of people who would rally around him. But as times changed, people moved, the pastor moved, and sometimes there wasn't church left because all the relationships were gone. And so we've looked at how do we make sure that the church is building relationships. So everybody's talked about small groups and home groups and things of that that build relationships and make the church a part of the community that it lives in. And I think going forward, those relationships and that relationship building is going to be a stalwart part of what we need to do growing into the church. But I think besides that, we need to be looking at the community and seeing what is it that the people who live in this area really want to have. And that's going to vary by the community that you're in, okay? We were just in South Dakota, as I was telling you guys before we started, and there's little tiny churches all over the place out there. But they have no trouble being supported and everything because those people, those are family churches. And so grandma, grandpa, grandkids, nieces, nephews, they all go to that church. And that's how it's going to be. You get into the urban areas and that community is altogether different. But there are still things that hold that church together that make it a part of what it needs to be. And as we look to the future, we need to look at, in society, what's holding relationships? How are people living? What are they doing? How are things going? You know, we've all seen the statistics where how many of the people who started working from home during COVID are just not going to go back to the office. Here in Orlando, I don't know how much office space is just plain vacant because companies are saying that they can do it a different way. And you know, we may be to that point with churches that, you know, that having the church building is really not all that important. You know, it might be that like here in Orlando, we have one building where the Holy Cross built that's big and has a lot of room. You know, it could end up being used by 8 or 10 congregations before, because they would have their regular weekly services in a home or in some other place and then just come together for large events.
Yeah, I like, you know, you've said a couple of things there. And I think earlier you were saying that, you know, the revelation that being a church planter requires a different skill set than your typical parish pastor. And I think you've hit on a few of those things here in what you just said, particularly around being able to, what I would say is exegete the community. You know, like in Central Florida here, we've talked about planting indigenous worshiping congregations, but we might say they're contextual or contextualized. And I think that rests on the conviction that the gospel can take root in any community. And then it's the role of the pastor or the planter to discern that community so that the gospel can be contextualized in a way that has a contextualized congregation take root. And that's some of what I'm hearing you say there. And then even getting into kind of the, you know, the times that we are in, there's exegeting the neighborhood, and then there's exegeting the epoch in time. And that certainly we're going to be presented with some unique challenges moving forward.
Yeah, that's very clear. But in all of that, we know that the gospel is going to prevail and God is going to accomplish his will. So as he has done for the last 2,000 years. So, Paul, we know that in June, you're going to be stepping down as the district mission executive. And so I give thanks to God for everything that he has done through you, for your hard work, for all of the effort that you have put in to see so many people reach for Christ through church planting. And we keep in mind that we don't plant churches as the end. It's only a means to an end. And that the end goal is that people know Jesus and have salvation in him. So do you have any final words of advice to give to the future church planting efforts in our district?
We have to always remember that the church is about relationships. Jesus himself, you know, calls us brothers and sisters, that we are families in a world where families are becoming more and more disintegrated and spread out. The church can be the family as people find family in their church community. And I think that's going to be even more so going forward.
Absolutely. The relationships are going to be very, very key. So thank you, Paul, and thank you, Jacob, for hosting with me. And it's been great to hear your wisdom, Paul, as you've learned through all of these years. And we also thank our listeners who tuned into this podcast. Be sure to check out our church planting webpage, where you'll see fuller explanations of our plans and visions and directions, the latest information, all those sorts of things. That will be at selc.lcms.org/churchplanting. And there you're going to be able to register for future church planting events. You can access the library of all of the podcasts that we will be making and find resources and tools for church planting. So please join us again for a future installment of these podcasts for church planting in the SCLC. God bless.